All right, the time is 24 minutes in the office. All right, the time is 2 minutes in the office o'clock. And it's early morning scoop. A very good morning to all our listeners tuning into Eagle FM, whether through our website or perhaps our app. We truly appreciate your continued support. I'm your host, Lois Oshimi, and here to deliver insightful update on economics, entrepreneurship, and of course, trade policy until the hour of 7:30. But before I dive into the latest economic development across Africa, of course, please be sure to connect with us on social media, follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can as well stay updated with the Villager newspaper on its various social media platform, that is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, WhatsApp. Don't miss our WhatsApp channel. That is Eagle FM Media House, just for your daily news update. And of course, the newspaper alerts. And download the Eagle FM app, available on Google Play Store. And of course, the App Store, just to ensure that you remain also informed wherever you go, wherever you are, dear listeners. Now, to start internationally, is that the East African nation is gaining a province as a top producer of higher quality vanilla, with export exceeding 265 metric tons in 2024. And its rich aromatic beans are drawing interest as well from global buyers for use in food and perfumes. We might take a listen to this particular subject.
Central Uganda, vanilla vines are flourishing. For farmers like Joseph Kaziba, these delicate green creepers have become a lifeline to prosperity for the last 5 years.
Vanilla has truly changed my life. Thanks to it, I can pay school fees for both children and my younger siblings. Even in my toughest season, I have never gotten less than 100 kilos, enough to support my family's daily needs and keep us moving forward.
Uganda's rich soils and favorable climate produce vanilla known for its rich flavor, but also for traceability from farm to shelf. That's become a key selling point for high-end markets abroad.
These vines take nearly 3 years to mature. Each flower is painstakingly pollinated by hand, and every pod is harvested manually. It's labor-intensive work, but the rewards are sweet, especially as Ugandan vanilla gains international acclaim.
In 2023, Uganda exported over 265 metric tons of vanilla, earning nearly $21 million. The US, France, Germany, and Canada top the list of buyers. Uganda is now the second largest vanilla exporter after Madagascar, but success hasn't come without challenges. Volatile prices leave many farmers vulnerable.
Vanilla farming is hard work. Each vine needs care until it matures. For instance, my farm is big, so I must hire people to hand pollinate every flower, unlike coffee where bees do all that work. On top of that, we face theft, so we also pay for security. All these expenses eat into our profits.
To protect farmers and improve competitiveness, the Ugandan government is investing in training, quality control, and export partnerships with promising results.
This has paid off and tremendously improved the quality of Ugandan vanilla on the international market, with the laboratory reports confirming Ugandan vanilla having the highest vanillin content as we talk, at a level of 4%.
All right, there you had it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that for decades, Tunisia has maintained a simple formula for stability, keep bread affordable at any cost. However, decades of urban fest policies have driven the youth away from farming. Now, today, nearly half of Tunisia farm workers are over the age of 60, a grim indicator of growing countryside. You might take a listen.
Ben Stewie is a wheat farmer in the region of Manouba in Tunisia. The 66-year-old agricultural worker teaches ancestral and modern farming techniques to a new generation of farmers. Hassan believes that due to many challenges, it has become difficult to convince young people to choose farming over city life.
There are structural problems which prevent young men and women from becoming farmers. If they want to work in this sector, anywhere in the country, there are no farm roads to access the land or to distribute agricultural produce. Water and electricity are not available. Why would a young person opt for such a hard life?
A recent study has shown that access to land is a fundamental barrier to youth engagement in agriculture. Imen Miseri is a food engineer who's working in the agricultural sector. The young woman says there is room to expand youth interest in farming by securing land rights in the North African region.
As engineers, we are facing a real unemployment problem. Many youths who turn to agriculture view it as a refuge, a necessity rather than a passion and a long-term job. The state must secure youth land rights to encourage us to farm. This could help control rural-urban migration and improve agricultural productivity in rural areas.
Experts explain that young farmers in North Africa face significant obstacles to getting the right amount of funding needed to start and sustain an agricultural business.
The most important challenge facing youth engagement in agricultural development is funding. Funding is almost non-existent. We cannot fund an agricultural project with an 11 to 12% interest rate. In any developed country, which supports farming to achieve food security, interest rates on loans for farmers do not exceed 5%. It is nearly impossible for youths to get loans. The state must step in to offer incentives and provide credit guarantees.
Crop production represents 64% of the total output of the agricultural sector, according to the Tunisian Institute for Strategic Studies. Nevertheless, wheat imports continue in order to provide subsidized bread for the population. In 2023, Tunisia imported $628 million of wheat, becoming the 28th largest importer of wheat out of 195 globally.
Agriculture employs 16% of the active population in Tunisia, with half working in cereal farming. The agricultural sector remains economically and socially important for its contribution.
All right, the time is 10 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to Zambia, is that President Hakainde Hichilema has challenged leadership, including chief, to provide leadership to their subjects to increase food production. Now, President Hichilema says Zambia needs to be the country of producers and not consumers. Now, he said every district, constituency and province must produce enough so that the country has sufficient food. You might take a lesson.
Will be harvested from President Hakainde Hichilema's Ibamba Farm maize field in Namwala district. The president was here to check on the harvest, accompanied by the First Lady, Mutinda Hichilema, Information and Media Minister Cornelius Mwetwa, among others. Over 2,050 kilogram bags of maize have been harvested so far. President Hichilema said the First Family has decided to lead by example in producing enough food and has challenged all leaders, including chiefs, to follow suit in order for the country to produce enough.
With last season's worst drought in living memory, we decided that instead of just operating this and many of our farms as ranches, we will now add crop, we will add food, maize, and we are irrigating, as you can see from the center pivot. The president has been talking about food security being essential for the country. Rain or no rain, in 3 years' time, we should target to produce enough food through irrigation agriculture. That's what you hear the president talk about, irrigation agriculture, using the soil God gave us, using the water God gave us, but now technology, mechanization, that's what you're seeing here, so that we produce enough food for ourselves.
The president is also encouraging irrigation agriculture and is happy with the effort put in by the workers here.
The workers you see here, these are local people, and all of a sudden they have jobs. Yes. On a ranch with few workers, that's the nature of ranching. On the cropping side, we have so many workers, over 200 new jobs right here. And we are still clearing more fields this side. And when we are done, probably we'll have more than 500 or so workers, if not 700 or so, here. And our priority is that we secure employment of the people in the local areas.
Earlier, when he addressed people upon arrival at the farm, the president reiterated his call on Zambians to work hard to produce surplus food.
We decided as a family that we will add cropping to our ranching site so we can contribute to food security. But also, we took a decision that we will irrigate. The president has been talking about irrigation agriculture so that with or without rain, in 3 years' time, when we work hard, when we work hard as a country, we'll be able to produce enough food for all our people across the country.
The first family has, from their own resources, donated a 1x3 classroom block to cater for the education needs of the people of Chibunze and Katoshi in Namwala.
All right, there you have it. The time is 14 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, South Africa, South Africa's Department of Communication and Digital Technologies is promising tech low charges to boost competitiveness in the sector, especially in the rural area. Now, critics urged outdated legislations, data, foreign investment, and reform could attract global tech firms to Africa's most industrialized economy.
America's Starlink, they have expertise with satellite technology.
We need technological help. We need Starlink at every little police station. We need drones. I actually got drones donated for the peace parks to stop elephant and rhino poaching.
Starlink is a satellite company which aims to provide global mobile broadband. However, funded by South African-born billionaire and controversial Trump advisor Elon Musk, it has yet to crack the nod in Africa's most industrialized economy. Why? Because South African law requires that 30% of any foreign investment be held by historically disadvantaged people, a requirement that doesn't sit well with Musk and many other foreign-owned companies.
It's not the Elon Musk pressure that we should look at. There are more people. People want to come and do business in South Africa. They're really reluctant probably because of this 30%. And we've seen that even with this 30% that's been sitting there, it's been hijacked by a small group of elite who haven't been able to convert that into the realities of economic development in South Africa.
However, that may be about to change now with the government taking a closer look at the law. The Department of Communications in particular is pushing for a more investor-friendly stance. It has proposed that foreign direct investment not be hinged on ownership criteria alone, but that any equity equivalent program as part of empowerment laws also be considered.
It's a program that allows multinationals to enter the South African space without needing to give 30% of their company to local ownership. However, this isn't a move away from our transformation goals. Companies are still forced to invest in equivalence to what the shareholding would be in regards to that 30% into programs that speak specifically to government's transformation goals inside the sector that they're in.
While Starlink could become a bargaining chip in U.S.-South Africa relations, opening up the ICT space could unlock huge benefits for the wider population.
This is really about saying how do we make our ICT sector more competitive? How do we attract more foreign direct investment and really expand our coverage so that all South Africans, especially those inside the rural areas, you know, have access to connectivity and the benefits that come along with that.
The ability to be realistic is to say, let's look at this realistically. Is it affordable? Is it effective and efficient? Does it help us to meet our goals and deal with our challenges on poverty reduction, job creation, and of course, inequality reduction as well?
Despite.
Right there, you had it. Now to move on to Tanzania, is that Tanzania has launched Nkumbi, the second and ambitious economic strategy to establish itself as East African's premier investment destination. Now building on 5.5% GDP growth in 2024, the plan focuses on investor-friendly reforms, infrastructure development, and rapid industrial growth.
Tanzania's recently launched Nkumbi 2 blueprint, short for Mkakati wa Kuendeleza Uwekezaji wa Biashara na Maendeleo ya Viwanda. It's the government's strategic roadmap to reshape the investment landscape and boost competitiveness for both local and foreign businesses. The plan outlines a vision for industrial expansion, infrastructure development, and regulatory reform, setting the stage for a more enabling business environment.
This plan will improve our business environment and attract foreign companies to come invest in Tanzania. This will also open up markets for products produced in the country, making Tanzania an attractive place to do business for the world.
Despite a strong GDP growth of 5.5% in 2024, the country is grappling with complex regulatory systems, bureaucratic red tape, and an election cycle that could delay critical reforms. Experts say the economic growth targets are attainable, but the real test lies in implementation.
In order to grow our economy, businesses have to grow and increase, and growth will depend on how favorable our business environment is.
Tanzania's government is targeting 6 areas for investment improvement: faster business registration, streamlined taxes, clearer land rules, infrastructure upgrades for ports and renewable energy, adjusted local content rules, and modernized digital and financial services. While analysts note inconsistent implementation in the past, business leaders like Yumani Mtambalike are watching for sustainable economic progress.
So to me, I think we are at that time of business unusual, moving these pieces of information from papers, policies and document to actually getting more mechanic and implementing them so that we can attain that number. Are we going to be able to achieve that, the $1 trillion economy, I mean, by 2050, according to Vision 2050? Yes, we are capable of doing that. But we need to move from business as usual to business unusual.
Tanzania's economy is increasingly shaped by foreign partnerships with China, India, and the UAE as major investors. The mining sector alone is projected to bring in $6.6 billion by 2027. Tourism continues to grow, drawing over 2 million visitors last year. Still, long-term progress hinges on industrialization, particularly in agriculture, mining, and infrastructure, alongside consistently policy reform.
All right, to move on to the next item is that a recent report from the United Nations Environment Programme points to a significant connection between the food wastage in Africa. Now, the prevalence of hunger on the continent, it suggests that current food systems are not efficiently utilizing available resources, contributing to a crisis where food is wasted while many go hungry.
Ching receives a fresh supply of tomatoes to sell at her stall in a bustling market in Nairobi, Kenya's capital. But business has slowed down and her tomatoes aren't moving like they used to.
Many of my tomatoes have now overripened. I couldn't even afford to take a break. I had to skip church just to come and sell them. If they go bad, I'll suffer big losses.
The rotting excess will be added to the growing mound of garbage that sits near the market entrance. Scientists point out that this kind of waste is contributing to Africa's growing food loss problem.
The Food Waste Index report of 2024 estimates that globally, every day about 1 billion meals go to waste. In Africa, the amount of food wasted is so significant that it is enough to feed a huge section of the continent's hungry population.
The report, produced by the United Nations Environment Programme, implies that the current food production, distribution and consumption systems in Africa are inefficient, leading to losses and waste that prevent food from reaching those who need it the most. In 2023, 1 in 5 people in Africa faced hunger, a striking contrast to the global figure of 1 in 11. Africa Harvest, an organization that deals with streamlining and boosting agricultural production on the continent, says it's looking to tackle the problem on a larger scale.
In Africa, the whole area of food and being food sustainability of food is a big issue. We are already importing worth $50 billion of food across Africa. 8% of that is food loss. 8%, which is almost $4 billion, is food wastage.
Causes of food waste and loss on the continent, they say, include climate change, where conditions such as drought or excessive flooding cause losses to farmers, post-harvest losses due to inadequate infrastructure and inefficient organization of markets for the end product are also cited as causes of large-scale food losses.
So there's ways which the farmers can do, like what I'm saying, organizing the farmers, and what the African governments can do. But I've said deliberate intention, it had been intentional, it had been invested in, is bringing in the mindset that we are wasting, we are losing on food wastage. The way we are very up about let's reduce, let's increase food production, let us reduce the food wastage.
The UNEP report adds that out of the total waste from food recorded in 2022, 60% occurred at the household level. The researchers suggest that food wastage tends to be lower in rural areas, possibly due to practices like feeding scraps to animals and composing waste for manure.
Clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that a poultry farming in Cameroon is drawing a young entrepreneur, entrepreneurs are contributing 4% to GDP and of course creating income opportunities in urban and rural areas. Now despite limited training and market access challenges, local livestock production shows a strong potential for growth.
A farm located northeast of Douala, with a clear vision and a structured approach. She gradually has scaled up her operations through perseverance and organizational skills.
It's been 2 years since I started. I followed a solid poultry farming plan, beginning with 1,000 chickens like any good beginner. Today, I manage about 3,800 birds. My long-term vision is to rear 50,000 birds. I know it's possible.
Belima has even hired an assistant who helps her to run the farm.
The first thing we do in the morning is check the storage water cans and the feeders to see if they are empty, if they need to be refilled. During the day, we keep observing the chicken. If the litter gets too damp, we add wood shavings to reduce odor, keep flies away, and prevent disease.
Belima struggles with the rising cost of poultry feed, which significantly reduces her profit margin. She believes these issues are common across the sector and deserve greater attention from all stakeholders.
If you interviewed 2,000 farmers, they would tell you the same thing. Poultry feed is expensive, and when it comes to time to sell it, we don't always recover our investment. The price keeps rising. I hope everyone in the value chain becomes more aware of what we're facing and addresses the problem.
Despite these difficulties, Belima remains optimistic about the future.
On the international side, I would like to thank my partner, Kazola Istop, who made it possible for us to start exporting. It brings peace of mind, especially on the financial front. I wish we could reduce chicken imports in Cameroon and place more trust in young local producers. Our products are competitive in both price and quality. Plus, they are healthy. It's all organic.
Belima's journey.
All right. To move on to the next item in South Africa is that the South African Reserve Bank and National Treasury are on the same page. Our inflation target range is too wide and misaligned with global peers. Now, but as policymakers debate the numbers, ordinary South Africans continue to face the pain of higher interest rate.
Reporter Dogozo Kumalo has more.
The General Industries Workers Union of South Africa says the Reserve Bank reviewing its inflation targets is neither here nor there, adding that what people need right now is a drastic cut in interest rates.
People are losing homes instead of buying new ones, right? People are losing vehicles. People are losing all sorts of things and mere, you know, assets that they've accumulated, furnishes and so on, because they can't keep with the interest rates and the cost of debt and of debt service due to extortionate interest rates that we have.
The repo rates, which is what the SARB charges banks to lend money, is sitting at 7.5%. Kiwusa is calling for the rates to be cut to 3.5%, a level last seen in 2020 at the height of the coronavirus pandemic. Kwesatu's proposal is less drastic. It's calling for a 50 basis point cut to ease the burden on workers, inject cash into the economy, and help households drowning in debt. Home loan provider Better Bond is more cautious, suggesting a 25 basis point cut would strike the right balance.
I'll leave the inflation targets to the clever guys at the MPC, but I'll say this: you know, we have historically always followed the US Fed. When the Fed cuts rates, we cut rates. So we're intrinsically linked to the US. But the Bank of England and the European Central Bank lowered their interest rates, and we are really hoping that we follow suit, simply because our inflation targets have been met.
Seif Property Group chairperson Samuel Seif says the 25 to 50 basis point cut isn't just desirable, it's essential, calling it a pivotal moment for South Africa's economy. MyWay Legal also backs a cut, especially for heavily indebted consumers. It says many are still paying debts that may no longer be legally enforceable, even though the National Financial Ombud has resolved more than 60% of such disputes.
So reducing the interest is great, but that doesn't really change the...
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the app.
The overall total debt outstanding, it doesn't really change the monthly installments that the consumers are still liable to pay, because that's still a contractual agreement.
The prime.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the last update from the international side of it is that Ilembe District Municipality is not backing down from its controversial proposed 13% hike in water and sanitation tariffs, despite a public outcry over persistent water shortages. Now, the hike adopted as part of a 1.6 billion rand budget comes as nearly half of the district residents continue to live without consistent access to clean water. Now, while officials say the increase is necessary to maintain and upgrade failing infrastructure, opposing parties and, of course, residents say it is an insult to those already struggling. We might take a listen.
To maintain and upgrade failing infrastructure, opposition parties and residents say it's an insult to those already struggling. Nobuhle Modise has that story.
The Ilembe District Municipality says it's steering its finances towards water, sanitation and infrastructure, essential services that define daily life for its over 700,000 residents. On Tuesday, the district adopted its 1.9 billion rand budget and integrated development plan for 2025-2026. The municipality says despite increasing costs, especially for bulk water, it has managed to avoid increasing service charges to residents.
Umgeni, to get water, what they would do, they would have
almost a similar process as we're doing now, or what we engaged in, where they would publish the draft tariffs as clients, which is municipalities, most of its clients, with a few private, will make comments. We did make exactly the comments you're talking about as council, to say we don't think 13%, 13.5 is a good number. But ultimately, once they've followed all the process, justify why they're increasing, they increase the tariffs by that amount.
For some residents, especially in areas like Ndulinde and Grantville, these promises feel distant.
Right there, you had it. The time is 33 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break. The demonstrator will take you through the local news. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha wutekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Chikawa shafa sana nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshefa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito mwa yoe, yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House.
Alright, welcome back. And if you're just joining us right now, a very good morning to you. And thank you so much for joining us. Now to start is that the Namibian tourism sector recorded its highest monthly occupancy rate in 2025, reaching 54.94% in April, according to hospitality statistics published by Simon Stone. Now, while this figure is slightly lower than the 58.19% recorded in April 2024, now it surpasses the pre-pandemic occupancy rate of 54.73% from April 2019, indicating a robust recovery. Now, thus, my colleague, Michael Petru spoke with Joseph Kafunda, a travel and tourism guide operation manager at Rafiki Towers and Safaris, to discuss this initiative. We might take a listen.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. You're here with Milunani and Michael Pietris. So tourism in Namibia is picking up again big time. Now, according to recent data, it is said that the country's hospitality sector had its best month yet in April 2025, with national occupancy sitting just under 55%. Now, without context, not many would have noticed, but these figures are very, very impressive, because not only do they surpass the numbers from last year, but in fact, they beat the numbers we saw even before the pandemic hit back in 2019. Now, national reports are saying this boost came from events like the Newspaper Cup and Easter holidays, especially in places where, like the coast, where occupancy even reached over 60%. However, we still do have leisure tourism leading the way, taking up almost 95% of all bookings. Now, to help us unpack what this all means for tourism and hospitality the months ahead, we're joined by Joseph Kafunda, travel and tourist guide. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, to start off our conversation, what are the potential economic benefits for Namibia's GDP from achieving a 54% national occupancy rate in hospitality?
First of all, I believe that we should applaud ourselves with the latest update on our economy, because since the heat of COVID and having something like this improve on a short terms, it's an massive. That shows that travel and tourism, or people are taking travel and tourism and hospitality business serious. Before COVID, everybody thought tourism is just about traveling. So they forgot about the hospitality part. When it comes to the GDP of the country, we have to understand now tourism has surpassed the fishing industry and has surpassed the agriculture, especially when it comes to employment creation. So more people and more people are being employed indirectly and directly in a travel and tourism and hospitality business. So this shows the boost that young people have a future, and we as a nation, we have a future in the travel and tourism industry.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Now, we do know that the Namibian government has made the nation aware that they're trying to improve air connectivity to different areas in Namibia. Now, with that being said, how does improved air connectivity to places such as Luderitz, you know, influence business travel and investment opportunities in Namibia's emerging sectors, for example, energy and, you know, logistics?
I think we should all embrace the government in what the government is trying to do and trying to impact, especially on the travel and tourism sectors with air connectivity. But at the same time, let's take a bit of a caution when it comes to Namibia. First of all, we are a country that is a semi-desertic country, very sensitive environment that we have. And how much water do we have to capacitate the size or the number of tourists that can be able to come? For instance, we know of countries like Tanzania and Kenya that went into mass tourism because they try to improve their air connectivity and so forth. But with the cautiousness and with the lot of environmentalists that we have in Namibia, and I think Namibia stands right in the right path when it comes to air connectivity. But internal connectivity, I think we need to do more efforts. We need to put more efforts in that department, because it's very difficult to get to Little Town or to any other town that other than Windhoek and Walvis Bay. For business people who want to come and invest, we cannot only be able to invest in the capital city or in Walvis Bay, for instance. So we need to look at a broader side of things where we can be able to invest air connectivity in smaller towns. Let's say if I want to fly to Karasburg, it shouldn't be a problem. If I want to fly to, let's say, Ondangwa, it shouldn't be a problem. If I want to fly to Gobabis, it shouldn't be a problem. That is how you develop your infrastructure. And that's how you develop the country in terms of development. We shouldn't just look at air connectivity and say, only bigger town, but at the same time, look at it with the sensitivity of our environments and what impact that air connectivity can have.
Now, thank you so much for that answer. Now, in your expert knowledge, in what ways do you think the tourism industry's recovery momentum can be leveraged to support job creation and, you know, support small business development in rural or coastal areas of Namibia?
The other day I was reading an article about the SADC Fund, which opened a little bit of my eyes. It was announced by Honorable Emma Theophilus, the Minister of Information. We need to create such a development fund that not only going to impact the capital city or the bigger city. Tourism, for instance, is everybody business. And tourism has an impact on both direct and indirect. Even for the person who is selling, let's say, fat cakes on the street, that person benefits from the tourism industry. Tourism is not just about traveling, about sleeping in beautiful accommodations. But on the side of the government, we need to come up with modern way of providing training to rural people, encourage them, motivate them, mentor them so that they can join the bigger industry. And tourism is a bigger industry. It's the same as mining. It's the same as fishing. It's the same as agriculture. But we lack the institution that can be able to guide and mold the young people to enter it.
Right.
So on that part, we cannot only also blame the government, mm-hmm. but we as a private sector, we need to come up with training providers, or we need to create training centers where we can be able to train, especially rural industry people.
Mm-hmm.
The rural people have so much to offer in the travel and tourism. We talk about cultural tourism. We talk about traditional tourism. We talk about gastronomy tourism.
Mm-hmm.
All these are part and parcel of travel and tourism and hospitality.
Right.
And where do you get gastronomy? Where do you get traditional or cultural tourism? In a rural area. But do those people, are they equipped enough to deliver what is required for the standard of the travel and tourism?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to join hands together with the government, with private institution, government institution, and let's create more training and provide more training to those people in the rural, so that everybody must feel welcome in the tourism industry.
Mm. Okay, great. Now, for my last question, given that leisure tourism accounts for over, 95% of room nights, what strategy can be or is being implemented to diversify tourism revenue streams through, attracting more businesses and eco-tourism travelers?
I think the efforts was being put on, and
yeah.
we had a lot of people, a lot of players playing their parts in order to promote leisure travels or leisure tourism in Namibia. And when we look at leisure tourism, through what the products that we created during COVID,
mm-hmm.
and I see a lot of lodges, a lot of accommodation establishments, they still continue with the process of that leisure tourism, where they offer Namibians and non-Namibians a leisure travel package. When we look at intra-Africa travels itself,
mm-hmm.
it's about leisure tourism. We Namibia does not have business travel tourism. We have very little. Because most of the people who come for Namibia for leisure or for business travels, they come for mining, they come for minerals, fishing, agricultural parts. But do we attract that a lot of leisure tourism within
right.
Africa,
right.
within the African continent?
Yeah.
So we need to put also mechanisms in place where we have to know. So let's not also be confused. We have a lot of medical tourism that comes in Namibia. They
mm-hmm.
come for medical care. And those people are also considered leisure.
Mm.
But for me, I've said, let's put more efforts. Let's put Namibia on the map. Let's try to promote Namibia through roadshows within the continent.
Mm.
We will definitely outplay a lot of countries that promote leisure tourism. Namibia has iconic place, has places that everyone on this planet wants to see.
Right.
But how do we promote it? That's also a question that we should be asking ourselves.
Mm.
But so far, I'll be happy with the private sectors. I'll be happy with the government putting up measures, especially when it comes to protecting our environments, when it comes to protecting our natures. We are the first countries in the world to have a constitution that protects what is in natural resources. So
right.
that's also proof to us as we are in the right path. But on that terms, I will say efforts need to be put, more roadshows, both private and government institutions, we need to come and hold hands and see how we can be able to improve this, not only for Namibians, but for everyone who is coming to Namibia.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, it was so great speaking to you, Joseph. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
All right. Staying on that, Loisa David in the tourism sector as well. Just share her insight when it comes to this occupancy rate automatic lesson.
Thank you for the question, Loisa.
Mm-hmm.
To what I understand, it is very important.
Mm-hmm.
To the fact that it's bringing more jobs, money, and helping local business to grow. All I can say, it's increasing to the GDP of the country.
All right.
At the same time, it's also taking out a lot of people out of the street.
Mm.
Although it won't fill up every person at the same time or fill the gap that is it's there. But when it comes to unemployment rate, at least it's decreasing it in a way. Mm. It also increasing the local business by supporting them and also increasing their income. They are being able to support their family and other stuff.
Mm.
So it is very important. That's, in short, I can say it is very important to the country.
Mm. Speak to us about this higher rate. Does the higher growth rate indicate that maybe Namibia is attracting more tourists maybe out there? And if so, what are benefits maybe for the country in welcoming more visitors, more tourists? And of course, how can also Namibia effectively market itself to potential tourists from other countries as well?
Okay. Thank you for the question again, Loisa.
Mm.
Yes, it is showing that like that more tourists are coming to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, as I said in the first question, it brings income, it's supporting jobs, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to our youth
mm-hmm.
that are working in hotels, lodges, and also in the travel sectors at large. It's really supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's also supporting the country itself. By increasing the GDP, by making sure that they are fixing the infrastructures, they are there busy with the roads and everything. So the country is also improving in the fact that they want to keep their tourists coming, and also at the same time, they are trying to have a better picture. Like, you keep your reputation right. So, so in that way, when we receive a lot of guests, they are making us make sure also at the same time that we keep our reputation.
Mm.
Namibia is also part of one of the countries that is, they say is safer. So when more people are coming in, they are also making us also improve on our security, the safety and everything.
Mm.
Okay. Namibia can attract more by, let me say, working on social media and online ads, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
And working with travel companies, especially when you have a connection with all travel companies, it makes it much more easier, mm-hmm. and also it improves the marketing system also. So whereby the countries can just be there, up there on the map, mm-hmm. just through travel agencies and other companies.
Mm, all right.
And, mm-hmm. and also by making it easy to get visa. At least they must, if you get your visa, it's much easier, then more people will come because they know that yes, if you go to Namibia, it's much easier to get your visa. One thing we must do as Namibian at large, I think we must improve our roads and also transport. We must make sure we cover all potholes and other things so that when the guests are coming in or tourists are coming in, they won't complain about bumpy roads and anything else. And also, same time, we must train or educate people that are working in the tourism and hospitality sectors, not only the tourism sector, but everyone in the country, the importance of receiving new people or visitors to our country. We must educate others. And we must also support the ecotourism, the community tours, local business. We must make sure we support one another.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, we are growing the industry and growing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we must also use the advertising method, all the methods that are necessary, all that are there, to at least reach other people to hear about our country. So in that way, it is much better. Then everything will just be in place.
Thank you so much, Loise, for your insight.
Thank you. Welcome, eh?
All right. The time is 52 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that yesterday, Namibia marked the first commemoration of the Nama and Herero genocide, reflecting on one of the darkest chapters in Namibian history. And we spoke with Brian Nguchinazo, a historian, a law scholar, a student activist, and of course, a descendant of the Herero ethnic group. We might take a listen to what he has to say more on this.
Yes, as we are looking at Early Morning Scoop, let us look at yesterday's commemoration of Nama Herero genocide of 1903-1908. And there is different emotions, different, sharing of memories of Namibian history. However, for us to unpack this conversation, I got into the conversation with Brian Guccinado. Brian Guccinado studied history, law, and also sociology at the University of Namibia. And he is one of the descendants of Herero. However, he come into this context to unpack what is the meaning of this commemoration and the contribution of this to Namibian history. So, Brian Guccinado, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, let us look at the commemoration of Nama Herero genocide. Maybe just before we go to the conversation itself, what is your view or what is the significance of this commemoration in the Namibian history?
Justice. That's what I call justice. At least the Herero people get a day to be recognized that they were at the forefront of fighting for the liberation of Namibia. Yeah. Not this narrative that SWAPO started it all in 1960. That their fight actually started way back in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
So, and they were killed, and for us to have a day to be remembered means a lot. It speaks volumes. We are finally getting there. We're getting recognized. Our fallen heroes are getting a day to be remembered. Mm-hmm. So it's justice that all these years we've been ignored, that Kasinga and Gulumbashe massacres are being always remembered, but the big one is always ignored. So I view it as justice finally has arrived.
Yes, there have been a lot of views, particularly from historians and also researchers about how this case of genocide should be handled. Looking at where we came from, particularly after independence, looking at the case of genocide, do you think there is great progress which is being done, especially when it's coming to negotiation between two governments and also the descendants of those who suffer deadly violence from German Empire during those years?
No, I don't think there's great justice being done at the moment, because the people who were killed, who are the descendants of the people who were killed, are actually sidelined. The people who are at the negotiating table are the ones who are possibly in it for some economic benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are actually affected are actually left out.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder, you don't even know why this sub of the chairperson of the negotiation topic committee is coming from.
Yeah.
You don't even know whether it's related to a Nama or a Herero.
Yeah.
And we understand their notion is that the genocide was not only Herero's and Nama, it's a Namibian thing. I understand and I respect that motion.
Yeah.
But the people who are directly affected should be involved, and them being left out all the time. When I look at the program of the genocide of yesterday.
Yeah.
I saw that the people, the dignitaries who were arriving, none of them were Hereros or Dama chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
They were given a little title as service chiefs. Service chiefs. I don't know what does that mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then they list out the arrival of who? The arrival of Bahamba, of Eliangurare, the arrival of dignitaries, SWAPO elite taking over. So I think we are always left out. The negotiation is suppressing the people who are really affected because we want to be at the forefront and negotiate this thing.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and I don't even know, we are hearing stories of some billions of dollars that will be paid over 30 years. So we are not sure whether that's justice. And we are not involved. So
mm-hmm.
we can't.
Yeah, there was a conversation and in 2021, there was a proposal on the table that Germany would pay 1.3 billion euros, if I'm not, yeah, that is correct, 1.3 billion euros, just for what it have happened. And there have been different communication and also different views to say Namibian negotiations, have been betrayed. And one of the negotiators, and I remember correctly, is a lecturer at the University of Namibia, Fanuel Kapama, said that was just a starter. The main course is still coming. What do you think about that?
That's just a starter. One would wonder how my senior panel government will come to such a conclusion and say it's a starter.
Yeah.
And say it's over 30 years for a starter. Then 1.5 we are hearing Zuma to be 30 years for a starter. I wonder, that's quite a long starter, 30 years.
Yeah.
And we don't even know the criteria they're using to come up with this amount. Mm-hmm. What did they look at? How do they come to such an amount for a starter of 30 years? The main cause is coming when after 30 years when it's long gone.
Yeah.
So it's a worrisome situation, and I feel the 1 billion they're trying to offer is a joke, because the land that they have taken from the heralds and a lot of atrocity they have caused can't be compared to 1 billion. Oh, I'm not saying a life of a person is worth money.
Yeah.
But the infrastructures we have lost.
Yeah.
It's worth some bucks. Mm-hmm. And it's not 1 billion. It should be more than that.
Yeah. While we are remembering what have happened in 1903 to 1908 there, let us look at how things should be handled, particularly when you talk about reparation fees. And also, apology, I understand the apology was given. Well, let's talk about reparation fees and also negotiations. Now, do you think the government hijacked the negotiation which was supposed to be handled by it?
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omutiha, utekirwa kaguna, I matina omjo. Chikao shafa sanana na longeshifa, ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo, ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakudo ni randitoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe okupipira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, onarahita tuimu. Datu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold, new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymnbook in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved IMBA that brings together various hymnbooks under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymnbooks on IMBA app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymnbook to be added onto the list of IMBA hymnbooks. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudia, with the Kirakaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafas and Anana, Longishifa, Yai, she became Moshiwana. E. Moyao, or Tango got his amen. Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangica. The Ethanina, Omaguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupitramo, Eagle FM Media House. Go to end the team, Meha, Uka Kompanga Nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa betu. Moambo, dengira selma, konara heka tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social
with 1-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudia, with the Kirakaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafas and Anana, Longishifa, Yai, she became Moshiwana. E. Moyao, or Tango got his amen. Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangica.
Zeithanina Omeaguro ni Randy Toma Yue, Yongeshefa Yue okupipira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nena. Kara omkwashi paregi uimwepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma onarahe tatu imwe. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Africans Selfwar Diara, and many.
All right, the time is 11 minutes to 7 o'clock. I'm so sorry, and we are very sorry. We were struggling with this connection. It's always humbling us sometimes. We don't know what happened, but we really apologize for that. And we were busy with yesterday's commemoration when it came to the genocide, where we spoke to Brian, one of the historian, law scholar, just to unpack that for us. We can continue with that, dear listeners.
Those who suffer deadly violence from German Empire during those years.
No, I don't think there's great justice being done at the moment, because the people who were killed, who were the descendants of the people who were killed, are actually sidelined. The people who are at the negotiating table are the ones who are possibly in it for some economic benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are actually affected are actually left out.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder, you don't even know why this, some of the chairperson of the negotiation topic, committee is coming from.
Yeah.
You don't even know whether it's related to a Nama or a Herero.
Yeah.
And we understand their notion is that the genocide was not only Herero's and Nama's, the Namibian thing. I understand and I respect that motion.
Yeah.
But the people who are directly affected should be involved, and them being left out all the time. When I look at the program of the genocide of yesterday.
Yeah.
I saw that the people, the dignitaries who were arriving, none of them were Hereros or Dama chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
They were given a little title as service chiefs. I don't know what does that mean.
Uh-huh.
And then they list out the arrival of who, the arrival of Bahamba, of Eliangurare, the arrival of dignitaries, Swapo elite taking over. So I think we are always left out. The negotiation is suppressing the people who are really affected, because we want to be at the forefront and negotiate this thing.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and I don't even know, we are hearing stories of some billions of dollars that will be paid over 30 years. So we are not sure whether that's justice. And we are not involved. So
mm-hmm.
we can't.
Yeah. There was a conversation and, in 2021, there was a proposal on the table that Germany would pay 1.3 billion euros, if I'm not, yeah, that is correct, 1.3 billion euros, just for what it have happened. And they have been different communication and also different views to say Namibian negotiations, have been betrayed. And one of the negotiators, and I remember correctly, is a lecturer at the University of Namibia, Fanuel Kapama, said that that was just a starter. The main course is still coming. What do you think about that?
That's just a starter. One would wonder how my senior panel government will come to such a conclusion and say it's a starter.
Yeah.
And say it's over 30 years for a starter. Then 1.5 we are hearing in Zuma to be 30 years for a starter. I wonder, that's quite a long starter, eh? 30 years.
Yeah.
And we don't even know the criteria they're using to come up with this amount. Mm-hmm. What did they look at? How do they come to such an amount for a starter of 30 years? The main course is coming when after 30 years when it's long gone.
Yeah.
So it's a worrisome situation, and I feel the 1 billion they're trying to offer is a joke, because the land that they have taken from the heralds and a lot of atrocity they have caused can't be compared to 1 billion. Oh, I'm not saying a life of a person is worth money.
Yeah.
But the infrastructures we have lost
is worth some
bucks. Mm-hmm. And it's not 1 billion. It should be more than that.
Yeah. While we are remembering what have happened in 1903 to 1908 there, let us look at how things should be handled, particularly when you talk about reparation fees and also apology. I understand the apology was given. Well, let's talk about reparation fees and also negotiations. Now, do you think the government hijacked the negotiation which was supposed to be handled by indigenous people, or do you think it should be a corrective negotiations so that, people can be compensated well? And what do you think should be a main form of transaction? Money should be paid to the government or directly to the authorities of those who are leading those, descendants, tribes?
You see, when I look at the reparation of the Jews,
yeah,
they pay to the government of Israel. And Israel, the whole Israel is just one tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
even if
okay.
They pay to the government or to a tribe, it's still that particular tribe.
Yeah.
But now in Namibia, it's quite different. We have over 10 different ethnic groups in Namibia.
Yeah.
And yes, that seems very difficult to spot two particular group of people. Maybe they might bring that division among the country, that the Namas are getting money, the Hereros are getting money, the other tribes are getting, so the division will be very high.
Yeah.
So the government to facilitate the fund once it comes is fair, but for them to be at the forefront of the negotiation without including us, this is where we have a problem. Yes, they can pay the money through the Ministry of Finance, and the Ministry of Finance, which is the government, will facilitate that whole process. It's fair. Mm-hmm. But to say that, no, let's leave them out, let's go ask out as the government because we don't have the help, it's unfair.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the analysts have indicated that there is a division between the leadership of those descendants, groups of those who were affected by genocide, and it's impacting or it's negatively impacting the communication between Namibian government and Germany. What can you say about that?
Yeah, no, that's very sad, because we have looked at the customary law. Let's start there. The customary law of the Herero people is not written down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something that is out there. So anybody can come up with a committee or an association to go negotiate. So it sort of delays the whole reparation money to come, because there are too many groups that are recognized in different constituencies that goes for this negotiation. This makes it very difficult even for the German government to decide who do we pay the money to. Maybe that's why they are now more listening or leaning more towards the Namibian government instead of the small groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's high time that as Herero people, we come together, we write our constitution, we have it in black and white, and follow what is written down on paper, and have one committee and two representatives, because these different committees is just delaying everything. Just end up not getting this money.
Yes, Brian, let us look at the final question. It's just when you are giving respect and commemorating what have happened, and also the spirit of fighting against the white colonial master, which really damaged Namibian society. How can we use this day of genocide commemoration to unite the Namibian people? How can you use this day to unite the Namibian people, not only the Herero Namas, but the Namibian people in general?
I think when I look at the program yesterday, when Netumbo was giving a speech, that's a well round of representation of the Namibian people coming from their president.
Yeah.
It's a unity where the president will always say something on behalf of the Namibian people, not only the Nama and the Hereros.
Yeah.
But they should have been given them a platform to say something live on TV, not have their own side program.
Yeah.
But we have them there. And then the other ethnic groups will give support, because when you really read the history of the genocide,
mm-hmm.
they might say the Hereros and Namas were involved.
Yeah.
But these people were looking for help from the Nehale. Samuel Maharero asked assistance from the north.
Yeah.
The Namas asked help from the Basters. So it was a Namibian thing, but majority were killed as Namas and Hereros.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, because they were working together then, I think it's high time that all the tribes of Namibia remember that Namibians were united then.
Yeah.
And during the genocide, it should serve as a unity platform where we remember that we're working together from the beginning. Let's work together now.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe a traditional activity, making like a cultural event where we have different groups who are affected or indirectly affected, dance, not only Herero and Nama events. All the tribes will be involved.
Oh, okay, maybe just the last one. There is an element of public history and heritage. Do you think there are enough memorial site or commemoration site which are built to remember that day, or they still need more things to be done, particularly when it's coming to keeping that history standing even for the future generation? Do you have enough statues, enough memorial site or remembrance facts?
No, it's like a small tombstone in Swakop Mound. That's a small one. You have the big one of all the liberation people, the Heroes Act. It's big, it's visible.
Yeah.
But the tombstone in Swakop is all tiny.
Yeah.
I think it's somebody or somebody's funeral or gravesite.
Okay.
They are not enough. They are not visible.
Uh-huh.
Amupanda the other day removed the statue of Kufon France at the city of Windhoek. I don't know whether it's replaced with a Namibian or something that will signify.
Mm-hmm.
It signifies the Herero Nama genocide. We don't know. So, but what I see, the most of the public history, public monuments, they are just about the founding father or anything should be around the liberation struggle. But when you look at the genocide monument, nothing. It's just like a small gravesite somewhere in Swakop and it ends there.
So you think there is a lot need to be done to keep that history alive?
Yeah, I think the National Heritage Council with the Ministry of Basic Education needs to work together and start coming up with statutes that will remember these particular days of the Namas and Hereros. And although at the bottom of my heart, I also feel it's a Namibian genocide because they're all Namibian. So we should have something big.
Yes, thank you very much, Brian Guchinado, for joining us this morning, and thank you very much for your input.
All right.
Cool.
Thanks.
All right. On that, also Ezra Angina Manu also shared his views, providing on rather historical context of genocide, and of course suggested steps to preserve our corrective history and heritage. We might take a lesson.
Let's continue with our early morning scoop. So today we are going to look at the public history and commemoration of Nama and Herero genocide. As we all know that the Herero and Nama genocide, or Namibian genocide, formerly known also as the Herero and Namakwa genocide, was a campaign of ethnic extermination and collective punishment waged against the Herero and the Nama people in German Southwest Africa by the German Empire. So public history and the role of historical commemoration of events and how they shaped national unity, the 1903 to 1908 Nama and Herero's genocide in one of the darkest remembrances in Namibian history. It has contributed to the way society has arranged today. So today we are going to look at what we can learn from this event that happened in 1903 to 1908. So today we are going to engage with Ezra Nyenomanu, one of the historian researcher. Good morning, Mr. Ezra, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Morning, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so what is the role of Nama and Herero genocide in shaping Namibian society, if we may to speak?
Thank you very much for having me. Let me air my views on the Nama and Herero genocide. These are the first things, just like when we are talking of the Maharelos and the king of Ukwanyama, the Mandume and Mfayo, this was the beginning. So when the whites, the Germany camps in Namibia, they realized after that, no, these peoples, they are now trying to get what we are doing to them, they realize it's wrong. So it's at that point now, they wanted at least to clean up those two nations, Nama and Herero. But they were not wrong. The Namas were not wrong what they were fighting for in Herero. They were fighting what belongs to them. Okay. By shaping, what does it mean to the future or to the Namibian nations? So it is very important for us to remember these days, because it marks the beginning of nationalism. So whereby we have also to consider this as like we consider other events that happened in past, like Windhoek massacre and Kasinga massacre. Even though this one was a genocide, it's the same. We are talking about the blood shed.
Okay.
So we need to commemorate. It's even getting, it's late. We were supposed to start with it later. I mean, earlier before. Now, this year, I understand he seriously recognized it. In fact, it's just to treat all the tribe equally. Because this one includes the two tribes, but we were not really remembering them. But it marks the beginning.
Okay. Can you maybe tell us what is the importance of remembering common pains and wounds of history in building the nation?
As I have said before or earlier, this should be also commemorated just like other days in history. It's at that point because we are still also remembering the death of our people, those who were killed by the Germany. And remember, our country was colonized by the Germany in the first place, Southwest Africa, Namibia. So if we are just to commemorate other events, but we forget where it started on the other side of the country, it's very important for us to incorporate it with other events that the Namibian people used to commemorate. And it's also bringing unity. We are one. As our forefather, the likes of Sam Nujoma, the late. One Namibia, one nation. So it's at that point that we have to commemorate this and the nation should see that no one left behind. Mm-hmm. If it's come to history.
Okay.
That is the most important. We just have to treat it like other events.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could say like the two massacres that we have in our history, Windhoek massacre and Kasinga massacre. Mm-hmm. Our people were drained during the Herero genocide. They were put in desert whereby they are not access to water and food. They die there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, so they say that the massacre are now recognized as one of the first genocide of 20th century. So what, can you tell us maybe they have been different views about the reparation fees to be paid to the Nama and Herero. How can this money be paid to the developed Namibia nation?
Okay, the reparation itself is the paying of the damage that a certain nation did to a certain nation.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this case now, we are talking about the genocide that the German did to our people.
Mm-hmm.
So now the reparations, I don't think it's going to be good at least to give to individual,
mm-hmm.
but just for them to pay, and then we use that money to develop the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Or either also to build up a monument where the Herero were kept in the desert. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And this can also be a tourist attractor.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to come and look at that area.
All right, there you have it. The time is 30 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this was Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I again apologize for the technical issue that just happened between there. We are very, very sorry for such, but we cannot control. We move. Thank you so much, and I wish you luck, and again to listen ahead to the next program that is Unpacking the Day by Tate Mike Oshoveri. Thank you so much, and from me, Loisa Shimi, it's a good day.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omotiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chika oshafa sana na na longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao, ota ingongo tisa mwene.
anangeshefa ya Namibia ompito mbwanawa olonjika zeithani na omayakuro ni randitoma yoe yongeshefa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nena kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu moambo dengera selma konora heta tuimu datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaji Eagle FM the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.